Hey, happy Saturday morning to you guys, wherever you happen to be out there listening. And ladies, this is Real Life with Beth and Rob. I am Rob Hall, along with Beth Guckenberger. Good morning, Beth.
Good morning. Happy Saturday to you.
Happy Saturday. My last Saturday broadcast from Monterrey, Mexico.
It's August. I mean, it's back to school time. Have you gotten your new school supplies, Mr. Schoolboy?
No. No. Basically, all I need now is like pens. That's it. Just to jot notes down. I should tell people I haven't been here a month. I should, in full confession, right? We pre-record the show, and so we've done four shows in a row. I would love to have been here a month.
I would have loved to have you here.
It would have been
month.
Awesome. But I got my time here anyway, and so this is the last pre-recorded show before I return to the United States of America. So it is back to school time. People are now gearing up. They're home from whatever vacation
new
they
backpacks.
Might have been able to do, or
new
a staycation
uniforms.
Or something. Most parents at this point are like, oh, my gosh, can school start soon enough?
I love that. Well, not me. I was always like,
really?
I like the lack of routine and schedule that summer brings. I like the spontaneity that comes with that whole season.
I would like to reconfirm that you're the oddest person I know.
I like that it's daylight until nighttime.
Well, I like that part.
I mean, it's just like, you know, it's just things are relaxed. Did I mention already we're tan these months?
No, yeah, we did do that already.
And, you know, and during the school year, you got to wake up when it's still dark. You got mm-hmm. you know, commitments until bedtime.
It tends to be a much more stressful time than
so,
different kinds of stress.
Why are you rushing back to school?
Well, you know, that's the American way, man. Next year.
I do like it's coming up on football season.
It is coming up on football season. You're right. And that is probably the best part about August.
I do like that football season.
High school football, you know,
Friday night
football,
lights,
pro football, whatever kind of
Sunday
football.
Sunday afternoon.
That's right. Again, there may be many of our listeners who are like just
fantasy
now
football.
Getting ready to press the button. They're like, I don't care about football or whatever, but it just happens to be something that we like.
We do like it.
Do you really like it? I mean, I like it. I know your son, Evan, is
and
like
Josh a, and Aiden
are just like crazy about it.
I like all live football games. So if I'm like live watching a football game, I always like it.
Yeah.
Televised football games, I really like all the things that go along with the televised football game, like
right.
snacks and good company and
right.
You know, that kind of thing.
That's right. More so than I like so the idea like that I would go home on a Sunday and I would watch football for an extended period of time alone.
By yourself? Yeah, no.
Just for
so
the
much.
Joy of watching football.
This is
that's
where our
not,
joint attention divides.
That's
yes.
exactly right. You're not necessarily into football for football's sake.
That's
the
right.
experience
that's right.
of football. That's why you need to be a fantasy football player, because then you would be watching the game, and not only would you be watching the game, but most of the time you'd be watching the little crawler at the bottom of the screen going, did my guy do anything? What are the updated stats?
You know what? I like football players that I know their stories. So, for example, we had on David Nelson a
yeah,
few
who,
weeks
by
ago.
The way, is now on the greatest football team ever, the Cleveland Browns.
Go
I mentioned
Cleveland
that.
Browns.
That's right. He was on Buffalo,
gosh.
Which is a fine town.
My father just rolled over in his grave
fine
that I
team,
said, go Cleveland Browns.
Right, but now he's on the Cleveland Browns, David Nelson. And he was great. And if you want to hear a show, you can go to our website and listen to it. He was awesome.
He has a heart. He just wrote me a little email. He got back from Haiti. He's now responsible for all these orphans. He's doing great things. Go find out about his foundation and be supportive of it. But, like, when I know a story, then I'm like, oh, if the Browns were playing somebody, I would automatically like them because of David Nelson.
No.
But
we are going to watch Cleveland Browns football this fall.
If he gets some play
you're
going
to come
I'm
to the house.
All in.
You're going to come to the house. You can bring the foods and the snacks.
And the friends.
And the friends. Since you like it, I'll be on my couch.
With your headset.
But it'll be the Browns.
Okay, well, yes.
Yes.
Again with David Nelson as my
yes,
number one draw.
Awesome.
I do. But I do. I like all. I mean, I think fall's coming. Fall has its own little charms, you know, just there's something about the death of summer that comes, you know, the death of the leaves that always kind of made me a little sad, but
you emphasize the death part of fall.
I'm just saying.
The death of summer.
It's like brown
the death
colors.
Death of leaves.
But,
come on.
I know. We got a little, like, you know, someone in my extended family is getting married. I think a fall wedding will be pretty.
I do think that that's why people perhaps in the routine, if they have school-aged children or that is part of it because it's the birth of something as well. It's a new year.
Okay.
Right? So listen to me. I'm
new
now Mr. Positive.
And
I am now Mr. Positive, and you are the cranky death of summer, death of leaves person. What a kind of switch is that?
That is quite the switch, actually. Well, this will be my first fall here in Americana in 16 years. So
that's right.
I haven't seen the leaves change in a decade and a half. Where I live, you know, the cactus are pretty much just always green.
Well, and your son is going to be playing American high school football.
I mean, we're going to have Halloween to celebrate. I mean, don't turn me off, listeners, if you're not a Halloween viewer. But I mean,
they just click.
I just mean all things Americana and that come with the fall. I'm going to, like, make apple, caramel apples, and I'm going to try to find a hayride to get on the back of.
You're just going
to
jump right back into America you never left.
I'm going to try. I'm going to try to just taste it all. And then, of course, introduce my children who've never been to the United States in the fall.
Isn't that crazy?
I'm going to be
Your
like.
Your kids have never been in the United States for the fall.
Never.
And Evan and Emma are, like, 15 years
old. That's right. I know. They have
crazy.
A lot to learn.
They do. And we will be the family to help them learn it.
They will be freezing.
Starting with Cleveland Browns football on Sundays.
I do think, I mean, I'm excited about, like, fires in the fireplace. Of course, I'm moving to the Midwest where it's going to get cold, like, in a week or so here. And
you guys are weird. You'd come home in August and you'd have fire in the fireplace.
Oh, definitely.
So, I mean, that you don't need any reason.
Down there into the low 70s, it was like,
98% humidity and the Gukenbergs are like, crack out the firewood. We're going to build a fire. Everybody's sweating inside, but the fire looks awesome.
Then we felt at home.
Yes. All right. Hey, we got an interesting show today.
Tell me.
We kind of, you know, we kind of revisit topics every once in a while, you know.
We have
And this is kind of a hot topic.
Tell me.
And we have Brian Tome on. He is the head honcho pastor of Crossroads in Cincinnati, one of the largest churches in the United States, and David Kinneman, who is part of the Barna Group. He has written a bestseller, a Christian bestseller called Unchristian. And we're going to be hitting that topic. What's the deal with millennials? They're just checking out. There's nothing about sort of the seeker-sensitive, mega-church, programmatic-heavy experience that they want. Mm-hmm. And so they're just sort of checking out. And so David is going to talk about that, and he talks about that in Unchristian. Brian's going to be on to talk about their experience at Crossroads. The reason that they've had explosive growth in the very short period of time they've been around is that somehow or another they have figured out how to bridge that gap. Their church seems to be just as attractive to millennials as it is to baby boomers, to non-Christians as it is to Christians, to minority families and people as Caucasian dominant culture people as well. And so we need to glean a little wisdom from Crossroads about, so what are you guys doing? How are you figuring that out? And he's a compelling guy. Brian will just tell you how it is. I mean, he's not a mincy word kind of guy.
Okay, well, let's keep him on a short leash then. I think
No, wait, Brian doesn't have a leash.
I remember a couple years ago at a pastor's conference, I heard Erwin McManus speak. Of course, he's the former pastor of a church called Mosaic out in Los Angeles, and he purposely, for a number of years, wouldn't announce the location of Sunday morning service until Friday night. And there was always this kind of buzz, like, where's church going to be this week? And they kind of hopped around because said that's how people make their plans for the weekends. They don't make it like, you know, they wait till the last minute and they find out where things are going to be.
Right.
And so he was trying to tap that younger generation, the way that cultural appropriateness, and I think it really worked for him. So we'll just see.
Right, and every baby boomer who's listening to our show who faithfully goes at 9:30 or 11 or maybe on Saturday night at 7.
Likes having a building.
They're like, what?
Yeah.
That's the dumbest thing I ever heard of, right? But that's what we're talking about.
But that's what we're
talking about. Millennials are like, oh, the buzz, and they're going to get on Twitter and
they're
let everybody know where church is on Sunday, and that causes them to be more excited.
Yes.
And baby boomers and Gen X are probably going like, well, what do you mean they don't know where church is going to be on? How do we set up?
Uh-huh.
All right? What about the chairs?
And the new generation is thinking, okay, well, what restaurants are near there so we can go out afterwards?
That's exactly right. They're doing the whole thing.
That's exactly.
Well, we are going to have that conversation.
I'm looking forward to it.
And we hope you'll stick around and listen to it because we got some compelling guys. Brian is going to tell us about Crossroads and some of their strategic thinking. And David is a really compelling author. His book, Unchristian, has been at the top of the bestseller chart for a very long time. And so we're going to dive in. We're going to try to figure it out. So. It's a great Saturday morning thing.
Absolutely. Good morning, and we are looking forward to having a conversation with you.
Absolutely. Hey, this is Real Life with Beth and Rob. I'm Rob Hall. That's Beth Kuchenberger. Brian Tome going to join us in just a minute. But until then, do whatever you can do in 60 seconds. We'll be back just after this.
This past summer, I went on a back-to-back mission trip to India, where I met a little girl named Shailaja from an orphanage with back-to-back. She was a new child at the home and was having a hard time adjusting. As I began playing with her and painting her nails, I was reminded that this little girl was just like my sisters back at home in the United States. Instead of a face on a photo, she became a part of my family when I realized that I could continue to help her through back-to-back's child sponsorship program. Even though she lives over 8,000 miles away, through the back-to-back sponsorship program, I can ensure that her spiritual, physical, educational, emotional, and social needs are met. The best part about the program is when I come home from school and find a letter from Shailaja. I am so thankful for God working within both of our hearts in order to lead us closer to each other and closer to Him. Visit www.backtoback.org for more information.
Hey, welcome back. Life with Beth and Rob. I am Rob Hall, along with Beth Guckenberger. We hope you're having a fabulous Saturday morning, wherever you happen to be. Good morning, Beth.
Good morning.
Welcome back. I mean, it's been a whole 60 seconds.
I missed our listeners.
In that 60 seconds.
And I'm excited about this conversation we're about to have, because I feel like this, we talk about wanting to have conversations that people can continue long after the show is over, and that those conversations then might affect behavior. And I think this day is a day just like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Brian Tome is joining us. He's the pastor of Crossroads. Crossroads started in 1995 when a very small group of friends in Cincinnati, they wanted to create a place for their friends who'd given up on church. And over the years, I mean, it's not been that long. There are over 12,000 people, I think. I'll have to ask Brian if it's just on the Oakley campus or they've got a multi-site thing going now. And the thing of that, and we'll talk more about this, but they are about combating generational poverty in Cincinnati in their urban core. They operate a medical clinic. They've built a hospice of all things, an HIV/AIDS hospice in South Africa. We've been talking the last couple of weeks about the millennials, especially. They want something engaging. They want something. Anyway, we'll let Brian do all the talking. He knows what he's talking about. I have to, in full confession, Brian's daughter and my daughter are besties.
Oh, I like that.
And so we are totally excited about that. And as a result, he and his wife Libby have to put up with Christine and me. So, hey, Brian, thanks for joining us.
Hey, you're welcome, Rob. Great to be with you and Beth this time. Awesome.
Excellent. Hey, as I was going through sort of the intro there and doing all that kind of stuff, give our listeners a little context about Crossroads. Started in 95, a small group of people, and it's kind of blown up since then.
Yeah, it has. It started, we were wanting to reach people who had given up on church but hadn't necessarily given up on God, and there is a lot of people like that out there. And the church just kept growing, and somewhere along the line when it started to grow, we asked ourselves, okay, what's the point here? Are we just continuing to get bigger and bigger and having more and more people come on the weekends, which is very fun and very cool, or is God asking some different things of us? We really had what I would call one of my born-again experiences. I've had a number of them in my life, and one of them was about 2001, after we had our first building. I realized that I just couldn't continue having yet another building campaign, another building, getting more volunteers, dealing with the systems, all that kind of stuff. That was the rest of my life. The next 30, 40 years, I couldn't do it. And so God really rebore in me, if you will, a vision for the kingdom of God. And I saw that if we could take people and mobilize them to actually be a blessing to our city and to our world, using our weekend services as an infrastructure to mobilize and encourage people, be a blessing in the world, and I could be all in that for the rest of my career. And what do you know? It took off, and we continue to have a lot of good things happen. And to the millennials, I always anticipated that the older our church got, we're about 17 years old right now, and the older that I got, the older our church would get. And certainly we've gotten a lot of older people coming to our church. But because of that kingdom focus, that desire to really be a blessing, to change the world, we've continued to stay young, and I'm constantly blown away by the high percentage of millennials we have in our midst.
Well, that leads to sort of the question of the day, the topic of the day. There seems to be a split between millennials and Gen X and baby boomers, and millennials have begun to create sort of their own experience. But that's not what happened at Crossroads. You've been able to engage across those generations, across racial and ethnic lines, across mature believers and new believers. That I can't imagine that happened by accident. What have you guys learned about engaging across, especially the generational gap? How do you get millennials engaged, but not have, Gen X or baby boomers walk out the door?
Well, actually, it did happen by accident. We never really.
Well, there you go.
There you go. Well, we never said, how do we, accidentally just kind of reach all of these different people? We just kept doing our own thing. And what we found out was, when you have a vision for the kingdom and you're very authentic, very nitty gritty, very unpretentious, that is a cross-generational attribute. It really is. And so the older I've gotten, in a strange way, in many ways, millennials are looking for sort of older father figures. Gosh, I hate to say it, 47, I'm an older father figure. Say it ain't so, Joe. Say it ain't so. But nonetheless, I think there's
something
going there. But God has implanted in all of us, Rob and Beth, a desire to make a difference with our lives. Every person has that implanted in them. In the millennial generation, they've got a bit of a brighter outlook of the future in their hearts. And so when they see a church that really is doing some fun and significant things, it sparks their creativity and attracts them to it.
We were able to interview a couple weeks ago the president of Moody Bible Institute, Paul Nyquist, and he has written a book called The Post-Christian Church. And he talks about how he thinks that the key to engaging millennials is this sense of vulnerability, that we need to be a church that doesn't always look like we have perfect programs and perfect pastors, and in order to, to be a Christian today, you've got to, kind of fall into line. That because of the, the outset of social media and all these things, we're just always all out there on our own little stages, sharing the good, the bad, the ugly. And one of the things that certainly your church has a reputation for is cultivating a culture of vulnerability and allowing people to kind of share, through affinity groups or on stage, the things that God's walked them through. And I think that there's a message for the larger church to learn from that. I mean, certainly that's one of the reasons we wanted you to share a little bit of the Crossroads story, because we want other churches to kind of capture that essence that you've been able to figure out. So I have a hard time believing it's all by accident. I mean, do you have any first steps you could say to encourage churches to do that?
Yeah, that's a great call, Beth. I mean, when I say it's by accident, that would be a bit naive of me to say. What I mean when I say it's been by accident is we're very surprised that we've been able to be as multi-generational as we have. We've had some very strategic thinking of things that we've done, but we just didn't expect to still be very relevant for 45-year-olds and 22-year-olds. And I think that you just, put your finger on it. I think the vulnerability thing is massive, huge. In fact, social media, we really don't see any vulnerability in social media. And you said the good, bad, and ugly. You really only see the good or the ugly of what we think about other people on social media, because it's all about rubbing yourself down to make yourself look good for other people. Okay, my daughter just told me the other day about the idea of selfies. So what's selfie? It sounds like a pretty crude thing to talk about. So that's when you take a picture of yourself and put it on Instagram.
Yes.
Like, okay, gosh, all right, got it. All we do in the social media sphere is present people with the best image of ourselves. That's what we do. We never take a picture of our supersized McDonald's and put it on Instagram. It's always, the meal that we had in France. And so this most recent weekend, to go the opposite spectrum with that, we did we closed up a discipleship series on how to develop kids. And so I did it this last weekend. I had two of my three kids up there on stage. And one of the things that we did is my two kids were telling stories about me that weren't very complimentary. They were talking about me taking a hike and being an ogre, driving the kids through the through this hike, and all this kind of stuff. And I think when millennials or anybody do that, this is a cross-generational thing. Everybody wants vulnerability. We do. Everybody does it. So it's said as a millennial thing, but everybody wants that. And so when that's happening, every person in that audience says, wow, I've never seen kids poke fun at their dad and exalt his shortcomings and him go along with it and laugh. Mm. That is entirely refreshing, and you're not seeing that really anywhere in our culture. And I also believe it's very biblical. So those kind of things of being self-deprecating are very important.
We learned, and we'll be talking to David Kinnaman at the bottom of the hour. Barna Group has polled and found out, 60% of millennials, believing millennials, leave the church early in their 20s. I wonder, you've got your finger on the pulse a little bit. What kind of spiritual trends? They're leaving the organized church. They're not leaving Jesus, for the most part. What kind of spiritual trends do you see amongst your kids' friends or amongst the 20-somethings that come to Crossroads? What kind of things are happening that you notice?
Well, I think they are leaving the church, and I think they are leaving Jesus too. I mean, they're claiming Jesus maybe as their dominant spiritual figure or more dominant than Buddhism, but they're certainly leaving a very vibrant, alive faith. One of the ways that you see this in the millennial generation is this really odd thing where you have to stick up for the beliefs of your other friends. And so you can have a millennial believer, somebody who's been going to a church as a millennial, and if they know somebody who is gay, which we all do, hopefully we have relationships with all sorts of people, they're unable to really look at verses in the scriptures that might indicate that's not the kind of sexual behavior God is excited about. They're unable to look at it because they're wired to protect the beliefs and protect the actions of all of their circle of friends, even if it happens to disagree with something that they believed a year ago. And so when you start to see, I'm starting to sound like some old fuddy-duddy, religious right guy here, but hang with me for a moment. When you start to see the abandonment of your personal beliefs because you want to stick up for the beliefs of somebody else, I'm not sure there's a lot of fervency with Jesus at that point.
Absolutely.
And I'm not just talking about that issue. Those issues go on and on and on. There's a part of the ugly underbelly of the millennial thinking is they do want to gather together. There is a positive aspect of change in the world. They want to be in community. They don't want to be Lone Ranger baby boomers. But what comes along with that is oftentimes what could come along with that is an unwillingness to step away from the crowd. And, of course, following Christ is all the way about stepping away from the crowd. And in our culture, that's becoming more needful to do, unfortunately.
Yeah. Hey, we got about 30 seconds left. And I know one thing I love about Crossroads is their willingness to give stuff away, the stuff they've learned, even sometimes in the materials they have. Where can listeners who say, hey, man, they got something going on there I need to learn about, where can they kind of plug in with you guys?
Well, we have a website. This is pretty new. I don't know if anyone's ever been to this thing called the World Wide Web, but you could check out this thing called crossroads.net. There could be some stuff on there. And Jesus said, freely you receive, freely give. And so we've never sold a single thing in our life. Maybe that's helped us with the millennials, because it kind of eliminates that thing of wondering if we're about the money. So anything we have, you're welcome to it. Just take it.
Brian, blessings to you. Thanks so much for being on. We'd love to have you on more. Love the topic today. Blessings to you guys.
You too. Well, if it's as easy as this was, I'd be on more. Thanks a lot.
All right, bro. Take it easy.
Thanks, Brian. All right,
we'll see you.
I love that guy. He just says how it is. Hey, we're going to be talking with David Kinnaman right after the break. More about this topic. He's written a book called Unchristian, you've probably heard of it, from the Barna Group. So join us right after the break. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob. We'll be back in just a couple minutes.
Do you have a family member who's getting older and can no longer be safely left alone? Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care, assists senior citizens and adults to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Visiting Angels has over 400 franchised locations across the nation. Experienced, compassionate caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meal preparation, and light housework up to 24 hours a day. Rates are affordable, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. Visiting Angels has cared for hundreds of thousands of seniors nationwide. Franchises are available. Call Visiting Angels toll-free today at 877-374-LIVE. To find an office near you, visit www.visitingangels.com. For home care for your loved ones, call Visiting Angels now at 877-374-LIVE. That's Visiting Angels, America's choice in home care at 877-374-LIVE.
He found shelter under the rock and lay there looking at the stars. God, do you remember me? In Tales of the Not Forgotten by Beth Guckenberger, Joel dares to ask for what he can't have. Serafina sacrifices what she can't afford to give. Abram looks for an answer buried out of reach, and Christina, saved by a mission, searches for her own. Follow these life-changing stories as they take you on a journey to faraway lands and unfamiliar faces. Travel through their challenges and see the hand of the great story weaver writing endings you'd never imagine. These are the tales of the ones the world doesn't see, tales of the not forgotten. In Tales of the Not Forgotten, learn how God is the great story weaver, weaving the threads of our lives into a strong and beautiful sign of His love. Check out Tales of the Not Forgotten book and missions materials by Beth Guckenberger. For more information or to purchase, go to your local Christian supplier or visit standardpub.com. See lives transformed.
If becoming or staying debt-free is important to you, you're not alone. 10 years ago, I was worried sick, overwhelmed with debt, and so tired of not having enough at the end of the month to make ends meet. I was working a full-time job, but getting deeper in debt every month, and I hated being away from my children. I finally said, that's enough, and I made a decision to do whatever it took to get free from the terrible debt that was causing me so much stress. I'm Gina Neef, and I want to invite you to find the same financial freedom that I found. Not only did I pay my way out of debt, I was also able to leave my corporate job and work from home and be completely available to my family. For years now, I've worked part-time hours, making more than a full-time job would ever pay. I remember the pain of being in over my head, and I'll never forget the joy of becoming debt-free. That's why I show others how to do the same. If you're ready to work from home and find financial freedom, then I'm eager to show you how. Go to findingfreedomnow.com. Discover how you can get free from debt. Go to findingfreedomnow.com.
Last October, I went on a back-to-back mission trip to Nigeria, where I had a chance to meet the boy I sponsored through back-to-back. The moment I met him, it became real that Jeremiah was not just a boy in a picture. He was a boy with dreams, hopes, and a story just like my own kids. At that moment, I saw how back-to-back is changing the lives of orphans around the world. I realized that in the same way I'm here for my children to be part of their stories, I can also be part of Jeremiah's. In the same way that my children can be a brother or sister to each other, they can care for Jeremiah. They can write him letters and share their stories as they grow up. We can help him to receive an education and food to fill his stomach, but more importantly, we can be involved in his life and encourage him to follow his dreams. I learned that sponsoring a child through back-to-back is not just about financial support for an orphan. It is about allowing God to intertwine your story and your heart with a child in need. For more information on sponsoring an orphan like Jeremiah through back-to-back, contact 513-754-0300 or email at childsponsorship@back2back.org.
Beth and Rob, I'm Rob Hall, along with Beth Guckenberger.
Yay! On happy this sunny Saturday morning.
Hopefully a great Saturday
August
morning.
Enjoy every last summer moment.
Absolutely.
Get a milkshake. Roll down your windows.
See, you're onto this milkshake thing.
It says summer to me. Cold drinks.
All right.
Loud music. I mean, I just think, you know, enjoy the summer while you have it.
Yeah.
Put on your flip-flops. You only got like another, you know, couple weeks of it.
Yeah. So David Kinnaman is supposed to be on the show, but we were having some technical difficulties. So
lucky us.
So Ken, the producer, is going to speak in my ear if we have any luck. And if not...
We have a different kind of luck.
We, What's that?
Because we get an extended time with guest number one, Brian Tony.
Yeah, if he's willing to, you know. He said it was easy. He said the first segment was easy.
He doesn't know how hard we're going to lean into him right now. It was that was just step one.
So, Brian, are you back with us?
Wow, yes, I am. I thought you were calling to rebuke me or something like that. Man, am I a man with honor?
Well, I don't know about that. Right now, we're just like, oh, my gosh, you know, they don't listen to us. You're much more interesting than we are.
And I thought to myself, we were just getting started.
We were just getting started.
Well, I'm definitely not more interesting than David Kinnaman, I'll tell you that for sure. But if I can be a substitute, I'm all about it.
All right.
No substitute, no consolation prize. One of the questions I had wanted to ask, but we ran out of time, Brian, is something that our listeners outside of the Cincinnati area might not be aware of, the fact that Crossroads has done something for the last several years that I, as an observer, of course, listeners know that I live in Mexico, but have always appreciated about what you did. And we were starting to talk about at the end about giving away things. So you all produce a journey or a multi-week study that you invite other churches in the city to participate in. And I like that whole ecumenical approach. And I'm just curious, the first time you offered free stuff to someone else, I mean, were the people suspect? That's just, as a church, you know, as the larger church body with the capital B, we're not really good about playing in the same sandbox. And here you are saying that you not only want them to, but that you'll provide all the toys. And so I'm curious kind of how that has unfolded for you and your church.
It was a really interesting journey. I know somebody we're all aware of, Matt Massey, here in North Star Church in Cincinnati. He came to me, 10 years or so ago. We had done a bunch of campaigns, financial campaigns, and they had been really effective. And we realized the reason why they've been effective is that it got the whole church on the same page about the same vision. Mm-hmm. And we realized it'd be great if we could do that and it wasn't money-oriented. We ought to tackle some big topics and have small group curriculum and weekend services and children's curriculum all around that same thing. And right around that same time, Rick Warren had come out with the 40 Days of Purpose, and he was selling those packets, and they were effective. And so we'd done one of those journeys. We called it The Journey, and Matt said, hey, is it okay if we could do that same exact thing with you? And I think I could get some other churches as well. And we thought, well, that'd be easy. The two changes we'll make is we'll take out our logo from all of those materials. And then second is you can just go directly to the printer and buy those things on your own, give them to your people or charge them. That way we can pass all the cost savings on to you. And that way all the people in those churches, they wouldn't know that this was sort of a Crossroads thing because our logo wouldn't be on there anywhere. It would just be a their church thing, or now it's increasingly become a Church of Cincinnati thing. So this last year we had, I think it was over 50 churches and over 50,000 people doing the same thing at the same time. We've had churches that are in other small or people in different churches in the same small group, and it's really been a fascinating kingdom thing here in Cincinnati, where the church is actually not just talking about being one, but we're actually doing some things being one, which I think in the spiritual realm is having some really, really big dividends.
Yeah, you just really mainly hear about churches pulling apart, splitting apart, dividing, you know, drawing lines, picking sides. Like, those are the words and the verbs you think of when you hear about multiple churches. And I really like that model of the unification and that joint conversation and the synergy, really, that ecumenical synergy where somebody could be at a workplace and they've got people around them that are all talking about the same kinds of things, even though they have, you know, different backgrounds. I think that's a great story.
Yeah,
well,
absolutely.
And one of the things that's fostered that happening, Beth, is, you know, our culture has gone increasingly, according to David's book, Attitudes and Church Attendance, un-Christian. You know, when Crossroads started, 50% of Cincinnati went to church. Right now, it's 33%. And if you look at the millennials, it's 4%. 4%. So when you're in a culture where you are the increasing, dominant, by far, minority, you just don't have the option any longer of majoring on the minors like the body of Christ has done over the last several decades. You band together more. You're a bit less in competition with people. It's still there because the flesh is there. And we all fight that. But I think that that dwindling, if you will, market share in American Christendom has had a really positive upside of having believers of different persuasions, pastors of different persuasions, actually see each other as brothers and sisters and actually want to work together because we are the few.
Yeah. You mentioned something that I would be interested in hearing what you had to say, that when you're in the minority, you know, it causes you to do certain things. And I think that perhaps an older generation of people are still living with the idea that we're in the majority. And so the things that we used to bicker about seem to be almost more political than kingdom-minded. So I'm wondering if that's something that you've noticed, that, hey, we're now more about kingdom stuff, or that's what seems to be bringing people together where other stuff was the things that pulled us apart.
Yeah, I think that churches used to define themselves by their secondary beliefs. Hmm. Are you a Calvinist? Are you an Arminian? Do you baptize infants? Do you dedicate infants? What's your view of the end times? Millennial, post-millennial. If you shared those concepts with the millennials, the crossers, they would have no idea what you're talking about.
Right.
They not only would not know, in all likelihood, what all that terminology was, they also wouldn't know why it would matter, and if they had an opinion on one of those things or a biblical conviction, they would be more than willing to give grace to somebody who had a different biblical conviction. Mm-hmm. You just didn't find that 30 years ago.
Yeah.
You're finding that today.
Yeah.
And by the way, that's the way it is in every culture across world history where followers of Jesus have been a persecuted minority. Now, we're not necessarily persecuted yet. We're humiliated, we're made fun of, but we are absolute minority, and we're just following with kingdom history that when that stuff starts to happen, those secondary things drop away and we band with one another. We're seeing that here in our country.
Yeah, absolutely.
And by the way, also, I don't know how much of a negative thing it is that church attendance is going down. Of course, the big thing that's in newspapers, there seems to be an article on it about every 3 months, is what's called the nuns. Are you familiar with the whole, with the nuns?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Yeah, yeah, not the Catholic nuns. Not the
yeah, those people who check none on their, exactly. What religious affiliation do they have, they check none.
Exactly. And, of course, the number of the nuns is increasing, and the number of the people who identify themselves as Christians is decreasing. And I actually am not bothered by that at all, because the fact of the matter is people have been checking the Christian box in our country for a long, long time that just were not vibrant with Jesus. Hmm. They were maybe aligned to a religious institution, but they were not vibrant with Jesus. If you're aligned with the church right now, it is more likely than ever in American history that you are seeking out the Holy Spirit, that you are mm-hmm. you are sensing His presence, you're wanting to sense His presence, more likely now than arguably any other time in American history, at least any time in the last 80 years. Mm-hmm. So I actually feel like the body of Christ in America right now is stronger than at any point in our lifetime.
Wow.
Oh, I love that.
Well, Brian, thanks for pinch hitting.
Hey, you're welcome. You're welcome. Can I hang up right now? Are you going to call me back because Barack Obama canceled with you or something like that?
No. We actually fixed our technical difficulties. David is going to join us for the last segment, but we would love to have you back on.
Oh, definitely.
You definitely have a great perspective on a lot of things that are happening right now in the church.
Well, if David disagrees with anything I said, just agree with him because he's smarter than me.
All right. Thanks, bro. Talk to you later. All right, man. See ya. Compelling stuff, and so I'm glad David's going to be in on with us right after the break, so, you know, best of both worlds.
I absolutely think so, and I really like what he said at the end. You know, what we are learning about the next generation is that they desire engagement. So the disengagement of the nuns is not necessarily indicative of anything.
Yeah,
we want the engagement of the sums.
Well, hey, David Kinnaman's going to join us after the break. He's from the Barna Group. He's written, if you haven't heard of the book on Christian, you're just not paying attention. That's going to be, we're going to be on right after the break. So this is Real Life with Beth and Rod. We'll be back in just 60 seconds.
Who's Weaving Your Story? The Story Weaver series by Beth Guckenberger highlights the plight of orphans throughout the world in personal, heart-grabbing stories of loss, struggle, and redemption. The kind of redemption only God, the great story weaver, can accomplish. Written for ages 8 and up, Tales of the Not Forgotten and Tales of the Defended Ones reveal God's ability to create a story far greater than we can imagine. And the corresponding 6-part Leader's Guides on CD help turn each book's content into a simple yet powerful 6-week curriculum for any church or small group. Use both together and you have a 12-week curriculum full of fun activities, compelling stories, biblical teaching, and practical applications. Let God weave your story and see what He can accomplish for orphans worldwide. The Story Weaver series is published by Standard Publishing and is available at www.standardpub.com or your favorite Christian bookstore.
Hey, welcome back. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob. I'm Rob Hall, along with Beth Guckenberger. Good morning, Beth.
Good morning. Good morning.
Hey, I don't want to waste any time. We got David Kinnaman on the line. I'm very excited. He's written the book Unchristian. He started back at Barna. I was reading about this. He started back at Barna in 1995 as an intern. Now he's the head honcho. He's the president, majority owner of the firm, and they are doing great stuff. And we are just so glad that he could be on the show, talk a little bit about the book Unchristian. So, David, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me, Rob. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Hey, I want to just jump in. And we were talking with Brian Tome earlier, pastor at Crossroads in Cincinnati, really about the trends that he sees in teens in the church. Can you, from your perspective and from the book Unchristian, what are some of those trends that you're seeing?
Well, you know, one of the major things that we have to take account for is this digital world that we're all living in, and I think you know, young people are the ones of the first that we're discipling in this digital world. And you know, I think it's really creating a different environment where they're exposed to a lot of different ideas, perspectives about sexuality, exposure to sexuality. And, you know, it's creating a huge way that they're, you know, spending so much of their time. I mean, you know, like my 12-year-old daughter was just, we were talking about how much time she was spending on Instagram, and she was the one noticing it. And, you know, it's a very different factor for us as we're trying to disciple this next generation.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, you mentioned your own sort of family, your own experience. Was that part of the what cultivated this interest in writing it? Or was there sort of a – I love some of the thoughts about Christianity has an image problem. Was it more like, hey, I want to address this image problem, or did it kind of grow internally?
Yeah, I think every study that we do has both a, you know, kind of a biographical element to it. I mean, I grew up as a pastor's kid and, you know, was wondering why so many of the young people that had made commitments to Christ were walking away from faith or walking away from the church, depending on which person we're talking about. And, you know, so there's a real interest that I had in that, you know, phenomenon as just a Christian and a person who'd seen so many people walk away. And,
sure.
You know, I think with Unchristian, we also really, really felt like there was this growing perception that if you introduced yourself as a Christian, there were all of these sort of negative perceptions that came with it. It's like you couldn't even have a conversation with your friends without all of that stuff in the background. So that's really the history of those two projects, Unchristian and the book You Lost Me. But then, you know, as a researcher, I'm also really fascinated by the social trends and, like, how does all of this, you know, play into how the church perceives its role in culture today.
Yeah, yeah.
I see that you have a curriculum that you have done in collaboration with several other authors for small groups to be able to discuss these ideas and these principles. And I'm curious, what's your hope for a small group? Like, as they become more aware of these trends, as they become more aware of our image problem, what ultimately do you want a small group to be mobilized to do?
Well, I think one of the really surprising findings from the study, I can describe this, I think, my goals for, you know, the products in this way, that, you know, we were really surprised to find that so many of the negative perceptions came from conversations, but there was also these sort of like this counter trend where people would say, you know, most of the Christians I know are judgmental or, you know, anti-homosexual, or they have this sort of, you know, hypocrisy about them, but there is this one Christian I know who's different. They're a coach, a teacher, a mentor, a neighbor, If I were to become a Christian, that's the kind of Christian I would want to be. And so in producing, you know, the book and any kind of, you know, materials that would go with that, it's to really help inspire Christians to have better conversations, to be the kind of difference that people notice. You know, we did this book, You Lost Me, where we looked at why young Christians walk away from the church, and we did a curriculum product on that as well. And in a similar way, we felt like the major problem from all that research was that young Christians really don't have great friendships with people who are older Christians. And so we designed that study in particular just to help spark intergenerational conversation. So as a researcher, we try to, you know, produce great resources based on what the research is telling us is part of the problem.
And as a researcher, like, what's something that you're learning right now? Like, if I put my finger down on the pulse of Barna or of Dave Kinnaman, what would I feel? Like, what is it that's bothering you right now about what you're learning?
Well, first, I'm super hopeful about a lot of the things that, you know, the church is going through. You know, I got to listen on a bit of the last conversation you're having, and I agree with everything he said. So that's, you know, I mean, the thing that I really appreciated was, you know, his sense that, you know, the Christian community is at a very strong point. And I mean, some of the trends say we're in a really difficult position. Some say that we're not, but, you know, I'm very hopeful about what God intends for his people. And really, I love millennials in this next generation. I'm 39. I have a 12-year-old and a 14-year-old and an 8-year-old kid. And I'm very hopeful about what God seems to be doing with this generation of digital natives. I use this phrase, digital Babylon, to describe kind of our current culture. And we think about in the Old Testament, you know, you have Daniel, who's taken into this, you know, larger cosmopolitan world of, you know, hugely pagan society. And for 3 years, they're asked to learn the language and science of Babylon. And then, you know, Daniel ends up becoming basically Secretary of State. And I feel like what's happening with this generation is they're being asked to serve and, you know, learn and be Christian in this, you know, very complex, accelerated culture that's something like digital Babylon. And, you know, so I'm actually very hopeful. You know, there's a lot of things we should be pretty concerned about in terms of, you know, how their faith is being shaped. But it's actually a pretty cool experience for them.
So we just jumped right in. You're talking a lot about the things that you're diving into. There may be some of our listeners who don't really even know what the Barna Group does, but you're feeding the church just great information. Tell our listeners about Barna in general, if some of them don't know.
Well, thanks for the setup on that. You know, Barna is a research company. We do polling like other polling companies would do, trying to look at, you know, what's happening in our culture today. And, you know, the challenge is that, you know, so many of us as leaders or Christians in our world, we've got experiences in our churches. We see things and we think there's, you know, some importance to it. And obviously any individual life is very important. There's nothing sacred about percentages or statistics or polling. But what we can do that's different is we can actually provide a more bird's eye view as to real cultural change. So we just released a study on our website about how Americans' views have changed towards gays and lesbians over the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the kinds of things, whether we think it's, you know, morally acceptable or not, and how we think about this, you know, same-sex marriage and rights and such. And there have been, as you can imagine, huge, huge changes, even with Christians. In particular, Catholics have changed substantially in the last 10 years. Evangelical Christians haven't changed as much in terms of becoming, you know, more open to LGBTQ issues. But, you know, it's an interesting sort of way of looking at this. And we actually take our vision or our mission as a company from 1 Chronicles 12:32, the people of Issachar who understood the times and knew what the people of God, what the nation of Israel should do. So that's our goal, is to use research to try to help inform Christians to live more meaningful lives in this complex culture that God's placed us in.
Yeah, and I imagine that if people visited your website, they could probably see a list of the things that you've done or are working on?
That's right. Yeah, we put a lot of data out for free as, you know, as we're trying to inform the church.
Yeah, and where can they hunt that down?
It's Barna.org.
And, how easy is that?
Yeah, Barna.org. And then we also have some really cool stuff at cities.barna.org. So if you're interested, you know, for example, if you wanted to find out, you know, how post-Christian is the city in which you live, we have a very specific definition of that. We look at 15 different variables of people's belief in God and their attitudes about a lot of things.
Great.
And so you can actually see, you know, where your city looks, how post-Christian it is at cities.barna.org.
Yeah, most of the time when I go see someone speak, whether it's my local church, some other church, some organization, they'll quote statistics, and in the parentheses it'll say Barna and give the credit. And so you are informing a great generation of people. Most people listening might not know it, but time after time after time, in the little parentheses, they are saying you are feeding us the information we need.
Well, it's a huge privilege, and we take it super seriously. We're you know, trying to get the very best data possible and really the most spiritually discerning data. You know, it's good data for its sake, but it's also stuff that we're very prayerful and thoughtful about the way we try to do our studies for the benefit of the church.
Yeah, and it truly comes out. Unchristian came out, bestseller, and now you followed it up with You Lost Me. And can people find that on your website, or is there someplace else that they might go to grab a hold of those books?
Well, either of those books are available at sites devoted to those books. Certainly there's information and free research articles that are at Barna's mm-hmm. site, but you can also find more information about the book Unchristian, which really looks at the negative perceptions of young non-Christians. It's really a book about evangelism in our culture, mm-hmm. and that's at unchristian.com. And then you can find more about the book about young Christians, which is really a book about discipleship with today's generation, and that's at youlostmebook.com.
Yeah.
That, I would have to say, was my favorite aspect about Unchristian and really about all the things. I haven't been on the city's website yet, but the idea that it's not just about information for information's sake, it's information so that we can better engage
yeah.
and reach out. So thank you for what you're doing.
Thanks, David,
for joining us. Blessings to you.
Thanks. It's been a privilege. Thanks for taking the time. And again, it's our privilege to be able to inform the church on this stuff and have a little fun in doing it. And so we appreciate it.
We like that. Thanks, David. Blessings to you.
All the best, Rob.
All right. See ya. There you go. Man, what a show. I mean, we got extra David. We got extra Brian Tome and then some David
My
Kinnaman.
Mind is going to explode. There's so many thoughts and questions I have still. I mean, I think this is a conversation that can inspire you for the rest of the day that you could continue to have with people
more than just
you.
The rest of the day. So if you're interested in any of this stuff, holy cow.
Go to these
crossroads.net, barna.org,
cities,
you lost me,
cities.barna.org.
I mean, crazy.
Go get on that internet.
Beth, another great Saturday.
It was good to
hanging
be
out
with you.
Now, I'm going to be stimulated to have... The best part of our show is now the conversation we'll have once that it's
that's
over.
That's exactly
and
right.
And we hope that's the best part of the show for you guys as well.
Absolutely.
So, hey, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for being
with us. I'll see you in Cincinnati.
I know.
That's crazy.
I'm very excited about coming home and being in this postmodern culture where I'm now learning I need to be engaged
right.
and I need to be authentic and vulnerable and I need to, you know.
Well, we're excited to be your neighbors. Hey, if you liked this show, you want to hear any past shows, reallifewithbethandrob.com on Facebook, Real Life with Beth and Rob, or you can download us at iTunes as well. Have a great Saturday, and hey, we'll see you next Saturday as well. Until then,
absolutely.
Have a great day.
Have a great day. Ooh, yeah.